And here's the deal. You have one life that we know of. Maybe you have multiple lives, but here's the one life that you know you have. And so if you've got that story, like, share it, because it will impact people's
lives. Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. David Trotter is the founder of Rise Up Creatives and the host of the Inspiration Rising podcast, featuring the experience and wisdom of female business owners and leaders. At age 25, David helped start one of the fastest growing churches in Orange County, California. After serving years in the ministry, David hit rock bottom, suffered a mental breakdown, and nearly lost his marriage. Amid his breakdown, David had a breakthrough. He went through therapy, had difficult conversations with his family, and wrote a book about his experience to help others navigate challenges in their marriages. Since then, he's authored several other books, directed and produced 3 documentaries, and started what is now a 6-figure marketing business, inspiring leaders to rise above their challenges and make a difference in their clients' lives. Hello, David. How are you?
Good morning, Ebony. It is great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you here. I'm excited. Let me just, I'm going to give an intro. The audience has already heard your intro, but just to remind them, you are the founder of Rise Up Creatives, and you help online business owners create beautiful, engaging social media in minutes. You were or are a pastor? Are you still a pastor?
Yes. You know, they say always, I'm part of a pastor, but I am not a pastor. I transitioned out of that about 12, 13 years ago.
Okay, but you have that experience. That's a huge...
For a decade.
Undertaking, yeah. You've also produced some films. Yes, you wrote a book. You have a book out. What is this book? It's called Empowered to Rise. This is a long title.
I got about a dozen books.
Oh, you have a dozen books. Okay. Great. So David, tell us, give us a little bit about your background as far as how you got into this space of helping people create beautiful social media. Like, how did that happen?
Sure. So actually during high school, I wanted to be a Sports Illustrated photographer. So I was really into photography. I won awards for it. I was a photo editor. And during my senior year of high school, I had this kind of spiritual encounter where I sensed I was supposed to go into ministry. And so I ended up going to college to get a degree in pastoral ministries, went to seminary, and I went into full-time ministry for over a decade helping start churches. And so for people that aren't familiar, that's in the kind of church world, it's called church planting, where you're starting with just a few people and growing a church. And I did that a couple times, once as an associate pastor and then once as a lead pastor. And unfortunately, Ebony, during that decade, I was really a workaholic. I really put in way too many hours. And the way I would best describe it is I was trying to fill a hole of not enoughness.
Yeah.
With, if I could help more and more people, if I could grow this church bigger and bigger, then I would finally be okay. I would be enough. I would be, if I could get that first book deal, then I would finally arrive, you know? Mm. And so in early 2008, I just hit rock bottom and kind of had a burnout breakdown experience, and ended up, frankly, even checking myself into a mental hospital for 3 days because I needed to get my head just straight, and had some challenging issues in my marriage and my relationships. And so I spent time kind of repairing all of that, and I had to make a new career for myself. And so because we had used a lot of marketing and communication strategies in growing the church, and I had done a lot of those things firsthand, I started a marketing business and worked with small businesses here in Southern California with branding and web development, videography, photography, and so forth. And I've done that for over a decade, 6-figure business pretty much the whole time. And then I wanted to be making a difference, though, not just through the marketing, but hands-on in some way. And so I had done about 9 or 10 humanitarian trips to the nation of India, doing a lot of things with people in rural villages and taking teams. And so I wanted to draw attention to the issue of orphans in India. So a buddy and I got a cinematographer, raised a few bucks, and spent 2 weeks in India really highlighting the life of 25 orphans living alongside a railway. We just hung out with them. We ended up spending the night on the streets with them one night, which was absolutely crazy. Captured that in the film. And then that film got picked up for distribution. And then it was on Netflix for 2 years, from 2012 to 2014. And I thought, well, that was easy. Let's do that again. You know? So went back to my distributor and said, I'd like to do a film on sex trafficking in the United States. So I'm really drawn to these light topics, Ebony, very light topics. We ended up choosing 6 female abolitionists around the United States who became aware of the issue of trafficking and opened up an aftercare home.
Yeah.
And so that film came out and did well. And I did 2 other films after that, 3 documentaries and 1 scripted feature film, all on social justice issues. And so by the end of 2018, I told my wife, I really want to be making a difference on more of a day-to-day basis rather than a year-to-year basis, because these films take so long to, you know, put out in the world. And because of my entrepreneurial background, church planting is extremely entrepreneurial. Plus, I had started a couple other businesses along the way. I thought, what if I kind of moved in the direction of coaching and consulting entrepreneurs, business owners, because people ask me questions all the time. And then podcasting, of course, could go along with that. So her natural question, of course, the story is coming to an end, Ebony, I promise.
It's a great story. Keep going. It's a great story.
Her natural question was, well, who's this for? You know, who are you actually going to be helping? And so we looked back over kind of the 25 years of ministry and marketing and movies and said, well, who had I most resonated with? Who are the people that I had most helped, or who was most attracted to me? And we both agreed that it was primarily women in the area of 30 to 50 years of age. And so I started Inspiration Rising, a podcast focused on highlighting female entrepreneurs and leaders. Early 2019, we've had almost 200 episodes up to this point, and opened up Rise Up Business Academy to help online business owners start and grow their businesses. And then recently just launched Rise Up Creatives, because so many of those business owners struggle with what to post, how to be consistent on social media. So, you know, it's a little awkward, to say the least, that a guy is kind of focused on helping women.
Right.
And I've had mild pushback on that just every once in a while online. If I say that I help women, because they're like, why are you trying to tell women what to do? And, you know, we don't need another guy. And I'm like, okay, I get it. But like, you don't know my heart. Like, this is not why I'm in this. Like, I'm here to champion women. I'm here to help women. I'm not here not to tell anybody what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of dropped that language from anything online. I don't mind talking about it on a podcast, because I'm able to talk about the nuance of it.
Right.
You know, rather than just like, I help what? No, that's right. It's just like, oh, all my testimonials happen to be from women. All my marketing images are women, you know.
Right.
I just love helping women. You know, I told my wife, I go, I think either there's one of two reasons why women are attracted to me.
Yeah.
Either I'm gay, or it's because I'm just so hot and sexy and they just want to, you know, like they want to be. She's like, yeah, it's neither.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I love that. Okay. So you actually said a lot there, and I kind of want to just step back for a bit, because it seemed like from the beginning of your story that the impetus was this breakdown that you had. So, and you mentioned that you were trying to, there was something that you were trying to fulfill when you were helping people build churches. And did it just get overwhelming? And that's why you kind of just, you had to take a break and.
Well, a little bit more intense than that. You know, toward late 2007, the economy was starting to kind of plummet. And so giving in that situation in a church starts to take a hit. So we're feeling that as a church. I'm also was very type A, very driven. We had a vision of 9 locations around Long Beach, California, that I wanted to have one in each different city. And we already had 3. We had three different locations. So I was over one campus and we had two other campuses with other campus pastors. So we had about a dozen staff, probably about 750 people attending the three locations. It wasn't like a huge church, but to go from 12 to 750 in 5 years is pretty, you know, pretty good growth.
Right.
And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself.
Mm.
I was not the best manager of staff because of my high expectations.
Yeah.
And so that was creating a lot of turmoil in me.
Yeah.
And I was not finding that my desire to feel enough was being met in the context of the church's growth, because the church, it could never be big enough. Even if it was 2,000 people, it wouldn't have been big enough, because my heart was feeling this need to feel enough. And because of that, honestly, and this is you know, something I will talk about from time to time, but I ended up choosing to connect with my wife's best friend and develop a relationship with her, and ended up having an affair and moved out with this gal. And we moved into an apartment, and she left me about 45 days later and went back to her family.
Yeah.
And so I had kind of walked away from ministry, walked away from my education, walked away from my family, even though I was still in touch with my kids. Obviously they were young at the time. We were, you know, kind of doing the back and forth thing. My whole life imploded. It just imploded.
Yeah.
Imploded. Yeah. And it was all in a desire to have something or someone look me in the eye and say, David Trotter, you're enough. I love you. I care about you. I want to be with you. Now, even though my wife was telling me that, I didn't believe her.
Right.
And so it required me, from literally losing everything, hitting rock bottom, so humiliating. Because it was a public, you know, it was very public. People knew. I had, you know, a couple death threats against me. Like people, you know, people don't get happy when pastors do that.
Right.
And so I just made a mess and hurt a lot of people. And so I had a lot of rebuilding to do. And my wife and I took, it's a long story, essentially, you know, I took responsibility for my actions and ended up moving back in the house about 6 months later.
Yeah.
And we've been married now almost 27 years. And so, you know, I love my wife. I'm super happy and honored to be with her and my family. And, you know, my kids are now 21 and 18. And so it's been a long road, though.
Yeah.
Long road.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story. That's, you know what, I think everyone, David, always has that feeling of I'm not good enough at some point in your life. And I think that especially a lot of writers, even bloggers, they feel like specifically they're not good enough in their writing. They're not good enough in their blogging. And they just feel that they give up very easily. They give up within the first few months of even setting anything up because they're scared of what people are going to think. So I think that's very, it's a powerful, you know, story that yes, that feeling of not having reached your potential, or you feel like you're never going to reach your potential, you're never going to do anything, that can really lead to a lot of other horrible feelings that can bring you down. But I think it's super inspiring that you turn your life around, that you, you faced up and said, yeah, let me fix this.
It's interesting how writing played a role in that, though, because I had written a small book around some kind of vision concepts at the church, and I had pitched it to a publication called David C. Cook. David C. Cook is a publisher, you know, in the Christian realm. And I got as close, like I went through multiple rounds and got to their editorial, you know, board where they decide which books are going to be published. I got all the way to that point. And there was another book by a now very famous pastor and author who was too similar to mine. And because he had a much bigger following and I had basically no following, they chose, you know, his book. And it was just one more kind of way of me feeling like that I'm not enough.
Right. Yeah. You know?
And,
yeah.
And part of the transformation process for me of kind of coming out of that and rebuilding my life is I started just self-publishing books and going, I don't need a publisher to do this. I don't need to be validated in that way.
Yeah.
Because for me, like writing is not my passion, but making, bringing about transformation or change or helping people bring about transformation.
Yeah.
That's my passion. In the same way that filmmaking is not my passion. I'm not one of those people that sits around and diagnoses, you know, looks at films and breaks them down. It's just a tool. For me, writing is just a tool.
Yeah.
It's more about the helping people experience life transformation or see things from a different perspective. And writing and filmmaking is just the tool or vehicle that, you know, is obviously a way to do that in our world.
Yeah, I think that's important because I think, like, for myself, I know when I was thinking of writing seriously, I would always compare myself to other authors and think, well, I could never be like her or him. And then I would procrastinate. I just would never, you know, I wouldn't get anywhere because I was always thinking that I could never be like, again, I just couldn't be good enough. Like I couldn't be J.K. Rowling, whatever. But I really like how you said you had to figure out your message or your purpose or your intention. And it was to help and inspire people. And I didn't really even consider that when I was first starting out, like, what is my intention with this? Like, how am I going to use my writing to help people? And I think if you focus on that, then it just opens up space because it becomes about like who you're going to touch, right? And not like how I can be like this other person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For me, it's the shift from performance and productivity to service.
Yes.
Because if I'm just trying to write a book to get a book published, that's about performance. And now I've somehow got to write something that's good enough for an agent to pick it up and then a publisher to, you know, put it out there and then other people to buy it. And that's more about performing or, you know, right, getting somebody to like me rather than going, no, I've got a message that I want other people, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I've got this story or message that I want people to hear because I'm bringing it as an act of service.
Yes.
Now it's like, well, some people will resonate it, some people won't. I'm always going to be growing and learning as a writer, editor, you know, whatever. But it's really about service. Like, hey, if it helps you, awesome. Right. That's totally the reason why I wrote it. I didn't write it because I'm writing it for recognition or for accolades.
Right.
I'm writing because I'm writing it to help you. And that shift was a massive shift for me.
Yeah.
So now, as I mentioned, I think I've got, I think it's a dozen. A couple of them are photo books that I've went along with a couple of the films that I did. I just found that as I was doing films, I could also write a couple of books that would go along with this film that would help the message. It would be another way of broadening the message besides the film. And I wrote a memoir about my whole experience with the affair called Lost and Found. And the subtitle is Finding Myself by Getting Lost in an Affair. And some people resonate with it. I mean, I've had a lot of guys and women read it and be like, and either they're thinking about an affair, in an affair, or coming out of an affair, and they're like, wow, somebody finally understands what I'm going through. Because if you haven't experienced it, you don't know how it's heaven and hell combined. It is just the most amazing thing, and it will kill you. It will crush your soul. And so, you know, I've been able to help a lot of people, but I didn't write that book in order to get it, you know, published. No, I wrote it because it's an act of service.
Right.
That changes then my energy when I'm writing it, and it changes my energy when it's out in the world. I'm not consumed by, did it get enough sales or did it get, you know, none of my books have gotten big sales. None of them. I'm not concerned about that. Like, yeah, would I want more people? Of course. But the people that do read it, it's an act of service.
Yeah.
Right. And they feel that, you know, they feel that. At least that's my hope, that they would feel it. That's the feedback that I get.
Right. And I think I was looking at what on your Rise Up Creative website, you have a video where you kind of show people what your service does. But at the end of the video, it says something like, there are people who need your service. This is what you're saying reminds me of exactly that. And it also, I think it's so powerful how your story is of service to people. I think that that's something we overlook. Like, everyone has a story, right? And that story, your life story, can inspire and encourage and motivate dozens and dozens or hundreds or millions of people, right? And I think we just overlook the power of our own lives, the power of our own narratives. And that's just amazing. I love how your story can be. I didn't even really think of it in that context. Your story can be of service. That's pretty powerful.
And I know one of the lies that people can believe that I believed along the way is, well, if not many people are going to read this, why even write it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if 100,000 people are not going to read this, why should I even go through the, a lot of books don't even sell over 500 copies or 100 copies. Like if only 100 people are going to read this, why should I even go through the process of writing it? I go, well, for two reasons. One, just by the fact of you writing it, you will be transformed. Mm-hmm. You will be transformed. I mean, you will have to clarify what your thoughts are, whether it's nonfiction or fiction. You will have to, you'll gain grit and resilience because it isn't easy to write a book.
Right.
You will learn things. If you're going through a self-publishing process, you will learn so much about how to do it and, you know, the whole mechanisms and all of that. And that can be so fulfilling. It can feel like, yes, I figured this out. This was hard and I did it. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if you had 100 people who were positively impacted, like if you could look at 100 people in the eye and go, no, I'm not going to allow you to be positively impacted because I don't want to write it for you. Like I don't, you're not enough. You 100 people assembled in this room are not enough for me to write this book. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know what I mean? Then I go, oh, that's a weird way of looking at it. Right. No, they are enough. Like, yes, I want them to read it. If only 100 people read it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what? It takes, as you were sharing your story, I was thinking, I think what keeps people from sharing their stories is the vulnerability part. Because a lot of times we feel so embarrassed, shamed in telling people things about ourselves that we're not so proud of. How did you overcome that?
Well, I wrote the memoir about the experience probably a couple years after it happened. And some people said, hey, it's too early. You know, why are you doing this? I will say that there was primarily two reasons that I did it. One, it was incredibly cathartic. The way that I wrote it, and especially because coming from more of a conservative Christian background, generally, if you're writing something about something that you did that would not be culturally appropriate, you have to have all of these caveats along the way. So I began to think this, Ebony, and yet I want you to know it was wrong. It was wrong to think that,
right?
Well, every time you do one of those caveats, you take people out of the story. You're now judging and providing this moralistic view on what's happening as opposed to taking people on the journey or the ride of what it was. And so for me, I wrote it first person, what I was thinking, what I was experiencing, and all the way through reconciliation with my wife. My wife wrote kind of an afterword about, you know, our process a bit. And it is raw. I mean, I've had so many people say, I read it in one sitting. It was so, like, I could not put it down. It's a train wreck that you don't want to, you know.
Right, yeah.
You don't want to look away from.
Yeah. Right.
And so part of it was just cathartic for me to put it all in one place.
Right.
The other is I really wanted to help other people.
Yeah.
You know, that go, does anybody else understand this? Is it possible for reconciliation in, you know, my marriage? And then for other people, even, I would say even that were a part of, you know, our church, that if they were to read it, that they would understand a little bit more what was going on inside of me. There's absolutely no excuse for what I did, but at the same point, you can understand what's going on in someone's own head and heart to go, oh, okay, I see that. Like I don't resonate with it. I don't like it, but I kind of have a better picture of it.
Right.
So I think those were kind of the main three reasons.
Yeah. That's amazing. That you were able to do that, to just find that strength and that power, the energy to put your story out there, because a lot of people are nervous about sharing some embarrassing experience they had this morning at the supermarket, like on their blog, but the fact that you really thought about who will this story touch and who will benefit from it, and it is super cathartic to be able to share something that's so painful. And I bet it was very healing. I mean, that's part of the catharsis, right? Is the healing power of writing your story.
It was very, very healing. Yeah. And my wife, I had her read it. And she had veto power all along the way if she wanted me to not put out the book.
Yeah.
If she didn't want me to put out the book, or if there was anything she wanted me to take out of the book, there were a couple of things that she asked me to not put in.
Right.
And there, if you read the reviews on Amazon, there are a number of people that are very pointed in saying that it was narcissistic for me to do this, or, egotistical. And I can see that, I can see that perspective. And I would even say, because this was way back in, like, this is 12 years ago, 11 years ago when I published it, I can see that there was possibly a part of that, of wanting to put that out, but I actually don't believe that anything we do, Ebony, is with pure motives. Mm-hmm. Like, there's even you having a podcast. Yeah. Well, I'm just here to help people. No, right. You want your voice to be heard. You want your writing to be seen. You want to be known a little bit in some way. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's good. Like, it's not bad, but when, how much of it is our maybe unhealthy motives driving us? At what point does that become, more unhealthy than healthy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only person that really can, deal with that is ourselves.
Yeah. I was recently thinking about the things that I really like to write. And I remember when I was in grad school, I met a friend at the gym, and she was like in her 60s, and we just kind of connected. And when she found out I was in grad school and I was writing, she said, can you write my story? And so she shared she was from Taiwan, and she had this amazing story about the difficult relationship she had with her mother, and it kind of ran back generations. And after she shared her story, she had to move back to Taiwan, and I lost contact with her. But I have her story. But I was thinking of the process of listening to someone else and writing their story, and how much I love that. And I said, maybe I should start that again and start with my own family. The minute I thought of talking with my parents, my eyes started to swell up. And I was like, this is probably what I need to do, because it feels like it would be very healing to sit down and write the story of my parents, which would then be the story of me. But just I thought of that because it reminded me of what you mentioned about catharsis and healing. And I think that this is why journals are so powerful. Even if you never publish it or share it, just the process of writing something that is very painful, a painful experience, can just be the most fabulous experience to write about it,
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say that, is there some like challenges with you and your parents, or do they have a particularly, painful story themselves?
Yeah, they have a painful, because they're divorced. So there is an affair involved there too. So it's, there's that. And yeah, I think that's the big one. And I'm not sure how forthcoming they would be. Mm. And so it just feels like it would be a very difficult conversation to have, particularly with my father, I think. My mother would probably be a little bit forthcoming. But so that kind of makes me...
Yeah, so it's not something that you guys have talked about as a family. It's not like an open... It's kind of more like, well, we'll just put that over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. That's very hard, because that puts him in a place of defensiveness and, mm-hmm. you know, exposing. But you could talk about your experience, you know what I mean? Your journey mm-hmm. of it and just yeah. what it was like from your perspective.
Right. Yeah. But it would be healing and
yeah. Well, maybe he would be open to it. That would be interesting. How would you like pose that to him? Like, would you go, "Hey, Dad, I would like to write a book about my life. There are certain parts."
I don't know if I tell him write a book about my life. I might say that might make him really nervous.
Oh, okay.
I would probably just, you know what, because my father is very much into like family history. He loves, okay. Nice. I think he, yeah. So I might say, you know, I'm really interested in just kind of being our family historian and just, you know, taking down some stories and learning a little bit more about your experience and how much are you willing to share? I guess I could.
Well, why? And if that's your genuine motive.
Yeah.
Like, because I think the question would be like, what are you trying to get out of it? Like, right. What would you say, like, what's the end goal for you?
The end goal for me, I think, first of all, I really do want, I want some type of written record of my parents' lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me personally, I think I want to understand their story so that I can have a better understanding of myself and my own pain.
Hmm. Would you say that centers around that affair, or is it just that's a part of the whole story?
I think it, I don't know. That's a good question. Because here's the thing. I feel like as a kid, I took on my parents' pain. Yeah. And I don't know if it necessarily.
How old were you?
I was 11.
Okay.
But I don't know if I was necessarily like I don't. What caused their pain? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so what happened in their childhoods, where it manifested into them coming together and having this problem in their marriage? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Like, sure.
So, and I feel like I have unconsciously, you know how we say we're never going to be like our parents, but then we always end up our parents. So I'm interested in that part. Like, what was your childhood like?
Yeah.
So that I can better understand what I've picked up from them unconsciously.
Yeah. So one way to do it would be just to do an audio recording. And mm-hmm. you're doing it in the context of, hey, I'd like to write. I perhaps would like to write down the road, but more importantly, I would love to just have an audio. You could even do audio or video, but even just audio would be probably easier. You don't have to feel like oh my gosh, there's cameras and stuff. Right. And just ask questions. Hey, tell me about your growing up. Like, where were you? You know, I know where you were born, but like, what was your earliest memory? Yeah. And literally just take them on the journey of their life from, you know, elementary to middle school, to high school, to college, or, you know, whatever, or jobs, meeting each other. Mm-hmm. And you literally just take them through the whole journey. And then that question would be a natural question that would come up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I know when you and mom are having challenges, like, do you remember when the first time you sensed there was a, you know, an issue, or when you, there was a disconnect? Help me understand why you were attracted to this, you know, this other person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, help me understand that.
Yeah.
But that's part of the larger, you know, narrative.
Right.
And you just have it on audio recording, and that way you can go back to it and write whatever, or have it transcribed.
You know, I just thought something, David. I think why this interests me now is because I can see how their relationship affects my relationships. Right? Like how issues that have come up in their marriage come up, and I'm talking primarily about romantic relationships, have come up in my relationship. And I think that's really, I want to learn more about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most likely, you know, that stems from how they experienced their parents.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a natural place to go back to their childhood and say, what do you remember about your parents? You know, marriage, what was that? What was that like? What was
that
like? Yeah. Cause I know that's similar for, you know, my wife and I, when I look at both of our parents, both of our parents are still together, and both of our parents are very different in a lot of different ways and similar. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I see how, here's an example. In both of our families, the women, I mean, the moms take on a traditional wife mom role in mm-hmm. terms of like things in the house and like, you know, life and, you know, all of that stuff. And so, I've seen how my wife has taken on that more of that role. Mm-hmm. And, that's a small thing, but like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, obviously we're like 27 years into our relationship and marriage and all that stuff. So, you know, we've talked about it, we've kind of gotten a rhythm, but, we still unpack those and see how our, you know, parents just naturally influence us. And so right. I just think that's a great project for you. What a great project. And sit down and just, and here's the thing that I think that you also have an opportunity to honor him, that if he doesn't want to share that part of his life or his story, that he doesn't have to, mm-hmm. you know? And even though it could be really healing and could be transformational for you, he doesn't have to, and you can honor that without pushing, you know, mm-hmm. That maybe he's not ready, and maybe he would be ready at a different time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there might be that, since you mentioned that might be for me, that fear of rejection. I might feel rejected if he says like,
But it's not about you.
Right.
That's about him.
Yeah.
And I gave my parents, for Christmas this year, that StoryWorth. I think it's called StoryWorth. Have you seen that advertised all over Facebook prior to Christmas? Where it's basically they send questions automatically to your loved one or whatever. And then at the end of the year, they take all of their answers that are and they compile them into a book.
Oh, wow.
And so they have all the questions that are sent automatically to whoever you get it to. But they send you an email each week and go, do you like this question? Do you want to change it to a different question? And you can even ask your own questions.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a fun way to do it. And what's interesting is I gave it to both my parents, and they're a little, some of the questions are like, you're not answering that too well. Like, you know what I mean? It's like one sentence, like, come on now, what's going on here? You know? You know, so you could send that to your parents, and all the questions could just be about the affair. They're like, wait a second here. I don't know. StoryWorth was just sending you those questions. I didn't make up any of them. They were just sending them to you. I don't know. That's weird that they knew that.
Oh my gosh. That would be so funny.
That would be a waste of money. Don't do that.
That's actually a very interesting service. I'm glad you mentioned that, StoryWorth. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. What's interesting, I would say that for people that are listening, because I know that if you're listening, you have either come from a family where affair was involved, you've had an affair, you may have an affair one day. Like, I'm not putting that on people. It's just statistically, that's just a thing, right?
Yeah.
So, number one, I would highly recommend that you not have an affair. It will destroy your soul. It will just destroy your soul. And, secondly, though, is if you do and you have kids, I would encourage you to talk about it appropriately at whatever the age is. Like, our kids were 6 and 9 at the time. And, you know, my wife, who's a kindergarten teacher, just did an extraordinary job of saying, daddy's making some really poor decisions, unhelpful decisions. And, you know, obviously my daughter was more impacted than my younger son at 5 or 6. He didn't kind of get things, but it's never been a taboo subject in our household. Mm-hmm. You know, like if there was ever a time when it was brought up, it wasn't like, we don't talk about that. Like, it was just honest. You know, me being honest and me apologizing to them. Like, I had to have a full apology session with them, you know, before moving back into the home. Not that that was like something that my wife asked me to do. It's just like, no, this is what I need to do. And, I just would say that based on what you're saying, Ebony, that your life was impacted, that it wasn't something that was, you know, talked about, that talking about it in age appropriate, non-volatile, healthy ways will ultimately impact your child, you know, in really, helpful ways.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree. I very much agree. And there was a period when it's like a therapy session. I love this. There was a period when I didn't want to talk to my father. I was so upset. Like I didn't really understand, you know, much of anything at that point. But for years, 10 years maybe after, I didn't even really have much of a relationship with him. He would call me on my birthday every year. He still is the first person to call me on my birthday every year. But that was about it. And so, yeah, and then there was, it's just a long story. But so I think that had it been discussed, you know, openly, at, you know, as you said, in age-appropriate terms. And I think he just didn't really understand. I think he was just feeling so much guilt and shame himself. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't really even know how to relate, how to deal with an angry 11-year-old girl.
Right.
You know, whereas my brother, who is 3 years younger than me, like they've always been close and he would, you know, they would spend time together all the time. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was just, I would think I was holding on to my mother's, I really felt my mother's pain.
Sure, of course.
Right.
Very natural. Yeah. And that, I've done a lot of therapy myself. So, I'd encourage you if you haven't done. So, you know, because that will have the potential to, as you mentioned, replicate in, you know, relationships by either being attracted to men who might have an affair or trying to fix them.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Or just avoiding intimacy because of fear of not wanting to be hurt.
Exactly.
And those are just natural, you know, responses.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is hard. Those are, you know, conversations that people don't, obviously, I don't even know why. I can't believe we're having the conversation. It's not a fun conversation, you know. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to promote this podcast. Hey, listen to me tell my story again 13 years later because of this lame podcaster asking me questions.
I was just thinking how this really took a different turn. I like it. I think this is really helpful.
It is painful. And you know, even now, what the crazy part is, even now our kids are 21 and 18, and there will be times that something may come up, and it's not like I would assume at some point in their adult life they have not read the book, as far as I know, and I assume at some point they probably would, and at some point I'm sure we'll have to dive into those conversations, you know. That will not be fun. But even now, you know, things come up that remind us of, you know, that experience. And it's like, don't sweep it under the rug. Just go, yeah, that is what it is. You know,
I think something happens to as someone's daughter, I can say that just as my parents age, it becomes a lot more what's like important to me. To really understand them, because you kind of realize that they're not going to be around here forever. Right. And then how sad it would be for them to pass on and me kind of still have all these questions that I would have, if I had only sat down and talked to my dad or talked to my mother.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think that even some strong therapy sessions prior to having, you know, asking him to do that or sitting down with him, so that you're very grounded in knowing that I am okay. Like if my dad gets gets pissed, you know, if I ask a question, it's not about me, that's about him. And right. I can grieve that and it can feel, I'll be sad, but I'm okay. Like I'm okay. I'm still enough. I'm still loved. I'm still valued. And that's his pain. And I'm sad by that, but I'm okay. Like I can keep moving forward, you know? Because you definitely would want to be real grounded if that's a possibility of feeling all that, all the feels.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's a great suggestion. And when you mentioned several times, like it's not, if he gets upset, that's about him. Don't take it personally. That reminded me of this book called The Four Agreements. Have you heard of it?
You know, I have heard of it, and I think I've scanned it a little bit. I literally just ordered it yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's an old book, and I don't know why I haven't gotten in depth on it, but go ahead.
Yeah, but the second agreement is don't take anything personally.
Yeah.
And I think I had to, like, I keep that book by my bedside because it's just a great reminder. Because if someone does get upset, it's not about me.
Yeah.
And so it's not because I think we tend to take things, like I was mentioning, if my father doesn't want to talk, I might feel rejected because it's like, oh, he's rejecting me. No, it's not really about me. This is about him and his way of processing it. And so I think that's just a great reminder, like, don't take things personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, how old is your dad, by the way?
67.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, my parents are in their early 70s, so they're very close in age. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's of a different generation where therapy and talking about
things
was not, unless they were on the leading edge in the 60s of that movement, if they were just an average person and they weren't on the leading edge of that, like, they have not, like, therapy's wackadoodle. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you're weak if you go to therapy.
Right.
And their parents, like, therapy for his parents was like, did not even exist in, you know,
right,
like,
exactly.
Suck it up. Come on, like, just get with it. So, you know, processing a lot of those things. I mean, obviously I don't know your dad, but that's new for a lot of parents, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah.
And so even that for me with my parents has cultivated, empathy. So, like, both of my parents, my dad was a pastor. My mom, they both worked in ministry for many years. And so I've seen them grow and be transformed in terms of their openness to talk about things. But, still, they don't come from that perspective, like that therapeutic perspective.
Right. Yes. Right.
So then that gives me an opportunity to just go, I'm going to have empathy, you know, for that, because they weren't brought up with that. And I, for some reason, in the culture of later generations,
right,
we were. That's just assumed.
Right.
Oftentimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for them, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't want to talk about those things. Like, why are we talking about hard things? Let's mm-hmm. talk about easy things.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's very true. Yeah. David, I can't believe we're out of time.
Does your computer only have a certain, like, it only records for like 50 minutes? Does it stop after 50 minutes?
No, I usually stop after 50 minutes because I will just keep going and going.
I'm kidding you. I'm kidding you.
Oh, okay.
My computer only records 50 minutes. We're done.
No, I usually stop because it's like, it's so hard editing down the longer I keep going, right? But oh my gosh. I feel like I could just keep talking and talking and talking, but this has been wonderful, and we didn't really get to talk about all the other stuff. You mentioned an email, but we kind of did tangentially, I can't say that word properly, but we kind of sort of hit on these things. But I want you to tell us where we can find you and all this stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't really talk about relationships or affairs too much, so I don't want to disappoint anybody if you follow me online. But I have a podcast called Inspiration Rising, as I mentioned, and you can find that on all the podcast platforms or at insporising.com/podcast. And also, we have the social media tool or resource. It's a membership program. It's only $25 a month, but I'd love to give, you know, whoever's listening, a 7-day free trial. If you go to riseupcreatives.com/free trial, riseupcreatives.com/free trial, you can check it out.
Great. Oh my goodness. How wonderful. David Trotter. Okay. So do you have any last words of wisdom or encouragement for people, particularly who are nervous about writing their story and sharing their story?
Yeah. So, it's your story, first of all, like Anne Lamott. I don't know if you know, people that are listening, maybe follow Anne Lamott, but I mean, just Bird by Bird is the best book ever written on writing. And I've been able to sit literally at her feet at an event and just draw in her wisdom.
Wow.
And by the way, this is a hilarious story. I wanted her to speak. My buddy and I wanted her to speak. This was back in like, oh man, 98, 99. And we wanted her to speak at an event in Seattle. And so I didn't want to go through her agent because I knew that was going to cost us too much. We didn't have hardly any money. So I figured out a way to look up her phone number online. I called Anne Lamott at home. She was doing the dishes. I heard them clinking in the background. And we chatted it up for a minute. Unfortunately, she couldn't speak at our event because her mom was in the process of passing. But anyway, back to the point.
Oh my gosh.
It's your story. It is your story. And hey, change names, you know, change names. And as she says, you know, give them like some really ridiculous, you know, thing. Like if you want to write about your, you know, uncle, you know, have him have like big hemorrhoids or something, you know, that he's not going to come forward on it. You know, change something that makes him not want to come forward. I'm kidding. No, it's your story. And here's the deal. You have one life that we know of. Maybe you have multiple lives, but here's the one life that you know you have. And so if you've got that story, like share it because it will impact people's lives. And if you go, oh, I'm not that great a writer. I don't know about this, that, there are people that will edit for you at a low cost. Like you can find people to help you. Just share your story. And one day at a time, right? Just one day at a time, start putting it down. You can do it.
David Trotter. Words of wisdom. Thank you so much. This was fun and enlightening.
That conversation, as we mentioned during the conversation, took a direction that neither of us knew it would take. So I'm very glad that that we did talk about relationships and marriage and healing, because a lot of people are experiencing that, not only in perhaps their marriage, but in their relationships, whether they're romantic or platonic. Relationships are like the foundation of nearly everything that we do, relationship with ourselves, relationships with our higher, or relationship with our higher power, if we subscribe to that, and relationships with people. And if there's a breakdown in any of those relationships, it affects everything else. So I'm glad that we ended up talking about it, and I hope that you were inspired and that you check out David Trotter's website and his books and his social media and everything, because he has some very inspiring and helpful services to offer. And in the meantime, check out zazo.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.